Today is Sunday, September 20th, 2015, and we're here in Yerushalayim at a very holy moment between Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. I want to say hello to the wonderful students in front of me, and a big hello to the many that are listening across the world. This is a class I didn't want to give. I actually was very upset in America with what I saw, what I heard, the questions I got. And I just wanted to get back to Israel and teach and be able to lahabitz Torah barabim and do what I can. But there's been a lot of requests, both from here and from all over. So I'm calling a press conference today to make a cheshbon hanefesh before Yom Kippur. Make it a drop lower, because I'm hearing a slight echo. In the United States, the greatest moment during the 5 weeks I was there was the farewell Shabbat for the Holzer family. And it was a unique moment. As I told you, I tortured the audience with my introduction that if they were real Hasidim and it's a family with Hasidic roots, we shouldn't have been in the room we were. The room should have been fenced off because Hasidic lore, at least that's what the Rebbe, that's what the Rav told me, and I write it up in the Rav, that where the Alter Rebbe stood in Haslovich when he was running away from Napoleon, they fenced off that area. No Jew ever stood on that area until Hitler destroyed Haslovich. And here I wasn't speaking in the very room where the Rav spoke so many times, in the Holzer home, and this is a farewell for a grandson, a granddaughter, a grandson and a granddaughter-in-law, a Talmud of mine, a son of a Talmud, and six great-grandchildren of the Holzer family going in Aliyah 3 days later. So that was a great moment. That was the greatest moment. By the way, what I spoke about was Yetziat Mitzrayim and the Ibn Ezra, and why the generation that left Egypt couldn't be the generation that came into Eretz Yisrael. And I dealt with the whole question of gradual adjustment that we who go in Aliyah of American origins, Anglo origins, we are the Dor HaMidbar. We're never going to be total Israelis, but we're no longer total Americans, and that is a perfectly natural process. Nothing to be ashamed with or to be upset with. I can go much further, but I have no time now. This is the concept of Kibbutz Galyot and Atidun, the Gemara at the end of Megillah, Atidun Batei Knesiyot La'alot LaBavel. What does it mean? It means that each Gola develops certain abilities, and when we all come back, we bring our specialties, and ultimately it forges into the state of Israel. And you don't need a bigger proof than the whole concept of outreach that began in America and began with Lubavitch. And today in Eretz Yisrael, so much is being done in North Tel Aviv, it's beyond comprehension. And this is all the result of the American Aliyah. I can tell you further, give you another example. When I came in Aliyah, a Rebbe didn't talk to a Talmud out of the classroom. It was considered to use a modern Hebrew word, distance. Do you know that word? You have to keep your distance, distance. And Baruch Hashem, American Gedolei Yisrael came and actually played basketball with their students. And ultimately, this impact that I'm living here now close to 50 years, it impacted on all of Israeli Torah. So that's what I spoke about at the Holzer House. That was wonderful. What broke my heart was, I'll give you an example of two questions I got. One question, a mother who I know from the 60s, early 60s on, was a secretary in YU, a wonderful lady, personal life difficult, got married late, and her husband died young, and had an einzige Sohn, an only child. And she was Moseret Nefesh to raise this kid with Torah and whatnot, and she succeeded. And of course, in America, you live in two worlds, so he was in Washington, D.C., very successful, a lawyer, a hotshot. And what shul do you think he davened in? In the shul where the rabbi is now in jail for, what is it, six and a half years. And this kid tells his mother, you know, religion is phony. If this rabbi the symbol of religion, a Talmud Chacham, the head of Gerith for RCA, if he could do what he did in the mikvah, the whole religion is phony. What do you answer this kid? That was one question I got. Another question was a kid from here who had the finest education. You cannot say he was raised Haredi and raised narrow-minded, not prepared to face the world. This was a kid who went to Steinsaltz's high school, who went to a Lee pre-army yeshiva, served in the army, was an officer, a lawyer. After the scandals here, the sex scandals, culminating with the rabbi in the north, Ezra Scheinberg, Hashem Rishon Yerkov, and this kid, he got married now. He didn't want a rabbi at the wedding. It's all phony. He married a girl of the Eidat HaMizrach, so thank God her father said, if I'm paying for the wedding, you're having a rabbi. So the kid is coming to America, and his uncle asked me, his uncle is a Talmud of mine, and he's going to be with the uncle for a while in Riverdale, and maybe the kid will want to go to Shul Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Where should I take him? So he asked me, in Riverdale, you have a lot of choice. You have Rabbi Morty Willig, you have Rabbi Jonathan Rosenblatt, and you have Rabbi Avi Weiss's Shul. You have left, center, right. I said, you don't take the kid to any of those places. Check whether there's a Chabad shul in Riverdale. I found out there's an excellent Chabad shul. Take the kids to Chabad. Maybe they can do something. Now, I and there are many more questions and quagmires and problems that came my way. And I want to state the following. What I'm about to talk about is my outlook on Torah at this moment in time in the year 2016. I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and I think you'll see a lot of the Rav's thinking. Am I right or wrong in what I have to say? 49 years from now, we can reconvene, and I'm alluding now to the Rav's Chamesh Drashot, where he talks about Joseph HaTzadik, and 49 years we'll evaluate whether Akefet was partially right, or totally wrong. My thinking is based upon three basic ideas that affect everything happening in the Torah world, both here and in the greater world beyond us. The first idea that I will expound is absolutely binding and absolutely correct, and it applies to every Jew who breathes oxygen. The other two ideas, you can differ with me, you can quibble, you can argue. 49 years from now, we'll see whether I'm right or wrong. Idea number one, I've quoted Mori Rebbe. Whenever I say Mori Rebbe, I mean the Rav, my Rebbe Mufak. I had a lot of good Rebbeim, but the Rav was the dominant figure in my spiritual life. Mori Rebbe said this 1,000 times over. I heard him throughout the decades. I have said it 1,000 times over. I repeat it again. Ger v'tosha v'nochi imachem. Avraham Avinu speaks to the B'nai Chet, and he's bargaining with them to gain the land of Israel, to gain Chevron, I should say, Kiryat Arba. And he says, Ger v'toshav anochi. What does that mean? And Mori Rebbe explained that a Jew lives in two worlds. On one hand, we're different than the rest of the world. We are not like the Gentiles. We are Jews. We have a Shabbat. We have Kashrut. We have Tarat Mishpacha. We have a whole different lifestyle. On that level, we are constantly gerim. We are not citizens. We are outsiders. We are foreigners. On the other hand, we are human beings like every other human being. We're blood and flesh, and we're part of the human civilization. We are toshavim. If someone discovers a cure for cancer, we are going to rejoice. We have vaccines that were invented, the sword by Sabin, what goes on now with the flu vaccine. Every Jew in the world is no different than a Gentile. And this is an unbelievable achievement that God said to us, that we have to conquer the land, we have to improve on God's creation. Study the Rav's magnum opus, Ish Halacha, and you'll understand what I'm saying. So we all function on two levels. But here's the tremendous danger. There are certain concepts in the greater world around us that contradict Torah concepts. And the challenge to us is at that moment we have to say, Torah conquers all. We cannot allow non-Torah concepts to become our guidelines. And what am I talking about? All right, you talk about economics. Economics, there's nothing in economic theory that we're going to oppose. But the economics, we sanctify with Jewish concepts as well, Chash and Mishpat. But there are concepts where there's a tremendous challenge. And we don't have to go further. The world has moved into a position today where homosexuality is considered perfectly normative. It is hard to believe that in the United States of America, a lady was just thrown into jail a few weeks ago because she refused to issue a marriage certificate to two homos who got married, I believe, where was it, in Kentucky, and wasn't in the New York area. But imagine, they threw her into jail for refusing to follow the dictum of the Supreme Court, the dictate of the Supreme Court, I should say. It's unbelievable. And not only that, you hear people right from this classroom, the leading so-called Orthodox rabbi, homosexual, one of my top students, 1981, published an entire book where he takes the Torah and recreates it and retranslates it and redefines it, and we have been totally brainwashed. Now, on that area, we have to say, we cannot be part of Obama's thinking. We are Torah Jews, and we can't allow alien thinking to influence us. We have to know where to draw the bridge, where to stop, where to say there's a wall that separates us. And this relates in many, many areas. You take the feminist thrust and all that has happened. And the Rev, by the way, related already in the 70s, the Rav already related these problems were real, the feminist push and homosexuality already. I remember the Rav was hysterical. And I heard in America my own students say to me, I quote, yes, the Rav said that, but that was in the 70s. That is irrelevant today. The Rav is irrelevant today, quote, end quote. So we have to know, Ger V'Toshev, where we stand. There's a second factor in my life that's very important. And this takes me back to the question that Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and Zecher Tzadik Livracha was asked. And this question reverberates in the Kollel since the late 70s. Rabbi Aaron was asked the question in Alon Shvut in Haaretzion, and a brother-in-law of one of the top Talmidim in Haaretzion in the Israeli division, his brother-in-law was my student in Gris Kollel. And he asked the question in Gris Kollel. And this question is a very powerful question. Who do we have more in common with? The Haredi, I'm using as a descriptive term, not a pejorative term. The Haredi living in the Geula, or the Chiloni living in North Tel Aviv? Who do we have more in common with? And here I have to say, as someone who knew the Rav intimately, and Tova Lichtenstein once said it to me very simply, when they accuse my father of being a Haredi, it doesn't upset us. When they accuse my father of being a left winger, that is upsetting. And I have to say that, who do I have more in common with? Absolutely a Haredi Jew. I can eat in his house. I can depend upon him for Shabbat. I know he understands Torah Mishpacha. All right. We have differences when it comes to Zionism, modern-day Israel, and the modern-day government, and perhaps university and training, and all that goes into the difference between YU and Lakewood, for instance. And we'll hit upon this tomorrow when we talk about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. But I have absolutely much more in common with a Haredi, but it's much more than that. Yet, well, I haven't said a thing you can ask yet.
I know, because you made an interesting point. I've been thinking about this a little bit. But because you mentioned about Lakewood and YU, and you're talking about left wingers, and I was wondering, because I felt this way too, do you feel that because of like COVID and the whole left wing world?
Well, do that, I feel what, man?
That because of COVID and the whole left wing world, like the Haredi world has more respect now for YU because they see more left wing. It's like, hey,
hold off. Let me continue. I have a lot more to say. let me talk about the Haredi word. Let me say something very important. What do we talk about the Haredi world? When you come into a shul, you come to a community, you look for a shul, this is what unites us. We daven the same way. Our shuls are the same. We have a mechitza. Let me tell you a story that I write about in Washington. I had a unique experience the other day, which breaks my heart, but at least it was a compliment. There was a funeral of a very great lady. And here in Gris, I wanted them to send a delegation. They looked at me like I stepped off the moon. Unfortunately, in life, da holeich v'dabba, and we forget about everyone who came before us very, very quickly. My first Rebbe in Yeshiva was Reb Michal Katz. Reb Michal Katz, I had for 2 years, was a great Rebbe. He tied together in his personality Europe, where he studied, where his father was Rabbi, Israel, where his father was Chief Rabbi of Petach Tikva, and he was an American too. He knew English, he knew baseball, he could tell a good story about what happened to him when he came to America, and he didn't know baseball. He had a wonderful, wonderful wife, Rebbitz and Hindi Katz. I write about them in Washington. So I want you to know, at the funeral were a handful of people. And I thank my grandson drove me because I had a cold. Today's the first day, Baruch Hashem, I start to feel more normal. And I didn't have the energy to drive to Beit Shemesh, so my grandson drove me and Malka, and we picked up Rabbi Gorelick and his wife, Reb Moshe Gorelick. And the maspid was her nephew by marriage, Rabbi Sorutskin. He was the one who gave the hesped. And he gets up and he quotes the entire chapter from Washington to Washington and the author's description of Rabbi and Mrs. Michael Katz. And then he asked, is the author sitting here by any chance? And everyone pointed, the guy sitting in the first row looking at him was a guy named Rakefer who was the author. So You talk about Haredim, you talk about the Haredi world, you talk about these individuals, our Rabbeim, the generations before us, the Mesirat Nefesh. Could you imagine you're going to have a synagogue, what they call today a partnership minyan? To me, and I'm proud to say, was the first one to say this already 10 years ago in Yerushalayim, sitting in a sukkah with very important, world-famous people, some of them very wealthy, board of trustee members of Yeshiva University, and they asked my opinion on the partnership minyan. I said it is absolute conservative Judaism. So could you imagine, today, thank God, I'm not the only one who says it. Suddenly the world woke up. And could you imagine, I go into a shtibble, I grab a davening with Hasidim and Baruch Hashem, and they're going to come into my shul where women are reading the Torah, women are having aliyat, women are davening from Amid. What have we done to ourselves? And this interconnection with Haredim, I can't go out and establish my own religion. I can have my own hashkafa. I can argue with Haredim from today to tomorrow. I can pull my shtick in them. I think, you know, I once, I have to my record, I killed a few Haredim over the years. They were sitting in audiences listening to me, and I hucked the head. What? Oh, yeah, you don't, I guess this is, I'll tell you, in Melbourne, this really, you Chabad, there were about 400 or 500 people, Melbourne, and the Mizrahi, Chabadnikim, and I said, you Chabadnikim, don't sing Hatikva. And I paused, and I said, tell me, do you say Matovo Alecha Yaakov? Of course. I said, who wrote Matovo Alecha Yaakov? I think it's Bilam HaRashi, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think Naftali Hirtzimba was any worse than Bilam HaRashi. So Yasser Lagutnik said to me afterwards, you almost killed me. I said, what do you mean? He was sitting next to the president of Mizrahi, Dr. Danny Lamb, in Melbourne. Lamb gave him such a zest in his side, he said, you almost killed me. So I can argue with Haredim from today to tomorrow. But I can't go and form my own religion. No questions now. I can't go and form my own religion. I have to be connected. I can't go and build the mikveh that they can't use. And I can't go and build the shul that they can't daven in. And I can't go and then buy meat that they can't eat. Plain and simple. So to me, that's very, very important that we can argue from today to tomorrow. But Haredim today, they just did a report, a sub-report on the Pooh report, and they came out with statistics. Two-thirds of the American Orthodox Jews are what they call Haredim, yeshivish or Hasidish. Two-thirds. That means that YU is a small portion of the total picture of American Jews. Now, I don't know where they're counting Lubavitch, because I count Lubavitch with YU. I've long ago claimed that Lubavitch is not Haredi. It's like YU. It's like a supermarket. You're going to find Lubavitches of every different type. And what unites them is their commitment to Lubavitch, to the Rebbe, the Shluchim, etc. But I don't know where they're putting Lubavitch. But two-thirds. And in the state of Israel, there's a sea change here, both on the outside and both on the inside, because we're heading to a statistic. Right now, they estimate 40% of the people in Israel are Shomer Shabbos, what you call halachically Lo Mechallelim Shabbos Beparchasim. 40%, well over 2 million. I did the statistics myself, it's well over 2 million. And you read the newspapers, you take a look who the stars are, you look, Rami Levy's daughter. Take a look at the way that woman is interviewed, how intelligent she is, the multi-billion dollar businesses she runs, and you don't see a strand of hair. That's the way her hair is covered, all right? And I'm a Litvak, I'm not, you know, I come from a world where they didn't cover their hair. But facts are facts. Take a look at Mahon left today, 1,600 Haredim, and they're breaking out of the ghetto too. So this connection is very important. Then I have to say something else that tortures me and hurts me immensely. Under our eyes, and among them my own students, we're developing a neoconservative movement. I refuse to call it open orthodoxy. It has broken with Torah on so many levels. I got to America and I read an entire press release of a YU graduate who identifies with Chobevei Torah, who made a Shekhiyanu b'shem u'malchut that the Supreme Court recognized same-sex marriages. And he explained himself. I can tell you, I met with the president, you know, he's my Talmud, and he said to me, no, we can't do it halachically, but we have to be happy to do it secularly, that at least they can get married. I want to tell you, as a Rebbe for 57 years, same-sex, this attraction, every survey in the world scientifically shows it's less than 2% of the animal population or the human population. So as long as we considered it a deviation, people got help. I had students who got help. They may have been born, I don't know, maybe it's this inborn tendency. I know 4 cases, 3.5 success out of the 4 cases. Today, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, and there are many reasons why. Now, again, it hurts me. I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to mouth it. But if you do the research, you'll understand a guy was, his mother was overbearing. So it's easier for him to relate to a man than a woman. I mean, one student was the end of 4 daughter sisters on top of him with an overbearing mother. He had a problem. It can be corrected. But when you say it's normative that you were born that way, Rakefet is a tyrant, then, of course, 2% becomes 10%, 10% becomes 20%. Obama just appointed the head of one part of the American military, an open homosexual, heading up. God have mercy on America if they have to go to war. I will not sell life insurance to anyone in the United States living on the East Coast, because Iran is just licking its chops when they can send their first missile over that will hit the East Coast. So make a Shekhiyanu, then the running to ordain women, it became a contest. Who can ordain more women? Rabbi Avi Weiss, Rabbi Steve Riskin, Rabbi Herzl Hefta. Herzl Hefta is my student twice over. BMT, the Kollel, he taught in the Kollel 15 years. You had Rabbi Bednash before. Turn back the clock, you would have Rabbi Hefter and not Rabbi Bednash. Ordaining women, it's beyond comprehension. And what, you're a bigot? You're against ordaining women? You're a bigot? And I saw this with my own eyes in America. Then I saw other articles, biblical criticism. Suddenly in Hove Beyond the faculty, the most awkward, lewd, stupid revival of biblical criticism and the Torah's allegories. Instead of saying, we have a kash on the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim, and I told you about this already, where he learns that Bilam's ass was in a dream, so out of that Moreh Nevuchim, the whole Torah turns into an allegory, and already we have an Orthodox rabbi, Yitzhak Mitzrayim, never happened. Rabbi Reverend Wolpe, a few years ago, the conservative rabbi from Wishield Boulevard, said it a few years ago, the world went crazy. Now you'll find Wolpe, the well-known, the son of the big conservative rabbi from Philadelphia.
Yeah, he's known, yeah.
When he gets up to speak, it's like God is coming down in Mount Sinai. And he said, Ribbono Shel Olam, what is happening to us? And then, to top it all, the ongoing revelation concept. No, the ongoing revelation? This is exactly Solomon Schechter's Catholic Israel. How many of you heard the Shayurim read by a guy named Rakefet on conservative Judaism in this very Kollel? Remember, I spent a year, half a year on it. What is Catholic Israel? Catholic Israel? When I was a kid, I used to hear Catholic Israel. Avram, I used to get frightened. Catholic. No, Catholic means universal. Universal Israel. So Solomon Schechter developed the idea that the ultimate arbiter of Jewish law, he has essays on this, are the Jewish people, Catholic Israel, Universal Israel. And there are sources for it. I spoke about it in great depth. And Lo B'nai Nevi'im, Hein B'nai Nevi'im, Fukhazim, Ayamad Davar, go see what the people are doing. Yeah, that's when we have a Machloikis and Psak, and you have Tzaddikim living a Jewish life. But Catholic Israel, suddenly they decide in the early 50s, you can drive the shul on Shabbos. And I knew all three signatories, all three who signed on, all came from Orthodox homes with an Orthodox background. Agus, Friedman I knew very well, and Adler, whose father was Mashkiach in Mesifta Teferet Yerushalayim. No. What does it mean? Ongoing revelation. Ongoing revelation simply means in every generation we can reveal new aspects of the Torah and change it in accordance with our understanding, in accordance with the influence of the Toshavim around us. God have mercy, and this is what they're writing, and this is what they're saying. Okay, so these three principles guide my thinking. Give the Toshav, keeping our relationship with our brethren known as the Haredim or the Black Hats or Yeshivish or Hasidish, whatever you want to call them. And the third point, right before our eyes, we see developing a neoconservative movement with some of our finest products of this very Kollel of Yeshiva University, other yeshivat, leading this revelation. Now, how do I deal with the problems that face us? Okay, let me deal first with some Israeli problems, and then I want to devote the heart of the class to some problems that are more American than Israeli. In Israel today, we have a tremendous problem. The Haredi world has a lot of power. Israel, unfortunately, is a democracy. I wish it were not a democracy. I wish we would have a Sanhedrin. I wish it would be a theocracy, but we're not going to see that until Mashiach comes. So it's a democracy. After having worked for the Mossad and communist Russia, I don't want to criticize democracy. When you've seen communism at work, you start to appreciate what democracy is all about. But democracy has a built-in fault system. Every individual has one vote. And individuals can range from learned to people who don't know anything. It can range from people who are tzaddikim to total rishayim. It can range from people who are lamdanim mufhakim and people who have long beards and payas and don't know how to open the Gemara with the right side up. So, and everyone has one vote in a democracy. In Israel, your ballot is your bullet. And the Haredim have tremendous political power. They today control the religious establishment. It reflects on every aspect of life, but the one area where we have the greatest difficulty is the area of Chuppah V'Kedushin. Many years ago, the Israeli government, led by Ben-Gurion, made a decision that saved the unity of the Jewish people. And you have to give Ben-Gurion all the credit. I can't go into more details now. Did he do it l'shem shemayim, or did he do it simply as a lark, because he figured in 20 years there wouldn't be a religious Jew left in Israel? It's a machlokes of historians. Chuppah Kedushin, the only way you can get married in Israel is the hands of the rabbinate. Personal status in the hands of the rabbinate. This kept us one people. Now, personal status means, are you Jewish? Aren't you Jewish? By and large, this was never a problem until the Russian emigration. The Russian emigration, which totally elevated life in Israel economically, physically, materially, enhanced the army many times over. It is probably the most successful aliyah that we have ever had. All the most famous politicians almost entirely are Russians today, which is just amazing how successful this aliyah has been. But it also brought with it at least 400,000 halachic non-Jews. Now, these Jews, when you look at them, they speak Hebrew, they serve in the army, they give their lives for Israel. There's no way that you can discern that they're not halachically Jewish. Many of them are of Zera Beit Yisrael. And here you get involved. If they want to convert, how do you handle it? What are your demands? All right, this is a topic I admit I know quite well, and I lectured on it in the Kollel many years ago, at least a year and a half, 2 years, I don't remember already. And there's an attitude a Beitin has to have, and there's no question that we have to demand commitment to the observance of the basics of Judaism, Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat, Mishpacha. Problem begins, what happens if they convert, and years later you see they're not that firm. And here you have a halachat chila situation and a bidiyabet situation. Without going into any more details, I'll only tell you that this is the only topic where you can trace a development in the thought process of Reb Moshe Feinstein. Generally speaking, Reb Moshe never changed his mind. And Reb Moshe did us a great favor. He dated all his tshuvot and told us to whom he was writing the tshuvot. When it comes to conversion, you see Reb Moshe's tshuvot in Europe in the 1920s, 1930s. If the people didn't observe properly, absolutely no conversion. Already in the United States, Reb Moshe introduces a concept which you cannot argue with. He quotes the Gemara in Klal Gadol, Samach Bet, Samach Gimel, Shabbos, Hamitgayer Bein Ha'akam. If someone converts among the Gentiles and didn't know there was a concept of Shabbos, you see from the Gemara, he's still a Jew. All they were concerned with is how many Kabanot Chatat does he have to bring. One of each Shabbat, but he's still a Jew. So Rav Moshe sees, we see from this, when a person converts, his Kabbalat Mitzvot is what he thinks Judaism is. And if you converted and didn't know about Shabbat, it's still a good conversion. He says, "Ani malamedskud." I'm quoting Reb Moshe now. "Ani malamedskud." I learn. I want to justify my colleagues who convert in America because they're converting people who think, what is Judaism? The way famous Jews live, and we're no different. And therefore, b'diavad, the conversion is good. And what this means in simple language, tell me, the average Jew in America, the average non-Jew who wants to convert, he looks at the average Jew in America. The average Jew in America, you'll say to him, I'm talking to my cousins, to my family, any family, all right, the Tarragons may have survived America in dignity. But you talk to my family, my wife's greater family, those left in America, you'll say to them, tell me, does the name Rabbi Soloveitchik mean anything to you? Never heard of him. Henry Kissinger? Oh, of course. No, Henry Kissinger's a Jew. On what level is he a Jew? What type of observance? God have mercy. Henry Kissinger, his mother had a sheitel. His father was Gabbai of the Minyan in Washington Heights, in the Yekeshim, the Big Shul, Kilat Adat Yeshur in KAJ. He married, divorced his Jewish wife, and married a shiksa on Shabbos. This is Henry Kissinger. Knew the average Jew, never heard of Rabbi Soloveitchik, never heard of Rabbi Feinstein, never heard of Rabbi Kamenetsky, never heard of Rabbi Lichtenstein. But he heard Henry Kissinger, I don't know, mentioned some famous movie actress who was Jewish, a movie actor who was Jewish. These are the Jews they know of. Ah, as Reb Moshe says, I'm Lamedskot. So you see, when it comes to Geirut, we have to demand everything. B'dieved, we cannot declare a person non-Jewish 2, 3, 4 years later if they're not totally Shomer Shabbos. This became a tremendous issue in Israel. Rabbi Avram Sherman, who had been a ranking officer in the army in the rabbinate, I knew him from the rabbinate, came out with a psak that you can annul Geirut, and the story circulated. They saw a woman walking with pants in a supermarket, and they retroactively annulled the Geirut. Now, so what do we do? And this question came up in Israel. It's a very big question right now. Rabbi Nachum Rabbanovich, who's a Gaon and a Tzaddik, set up his own Beis Din with Rabbi Riskin and a few others. And what everyone asked me my opinion. My opinion is very simple. We have to work from within. We cannot work from without. If you work from without, you destroy the system. And if you set up your own Beit Din, and with all my great devotion and love, and I know Reb Nachum Rabbanovich, I know the family very well. I was Masadik Kedushin when his brother-in-law remarried, and I was Masadik Kedushin. And I know the family, but we have to work within, we have to do what we can politically, we have to struggle, we have to get every vote we can. This is similar to Sirif Pekudah. This question came up with the Geirush from Gush Katif, which is beyond comprehension that Jews in power could be so stupid. But it is Gilui Shechina, every last person who made that Geirush possible was punished by HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'fneyam ve'ed. I mean, I don't want to go one by one by one. One of them, the last one, will soon go into jail for many years. Although it's unbelievable how the Supreme Court is hesitant and don't meet, don't give a decision, but the die is cast. But that question of Sirif Pekudah, if you start Sirif Pekudah, you end the army. All right, you refuse to listen on this level. The leftist says, I won't go into Kiryat Arba. The other person says, I won't go into Hebron. It's the end of the army. You have to work within the system. The politicians who run the army, they're the ones we have to hit at. Not to tell soldiers, so Sarev Pekudah, or we'll break down the greatest accomplishment of the Jewish people since Churban Bayit, the creation of Tzva Haganah Yisrael. The same thing with Geirut. If you set up your own Beis Din, and I know there's a Beis Din B'nai Brak, Rav Kanievsky's Beis Din, and he gets away with it somehow. Although at times they refuse to accept his converts. I had that to one lady I know very well who converted with his Beis Din. I was involved in helping her get recognition when she came in Aliyah. She was converted, went back to America, and came back years later. Are you Jewish? Who converted you? Rav Kanievsky. She went to Beis Yaakovim B'nai Brak. I don't yet believe Beis Yaakovim B'nai Brak takes non-Jewish girls in. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But if you set up your own Beis Din, then you have the Reform, then you have the Conservative, then you have the Humanist, then you have the Reconstructionist, and then you have the Supreme Court, which is not yet a proper Supreme Court, and they'll already be, instead of being Geirim, they'll rule like Toshavim. Israel is a democracy, and therefore every conversion under the sun is recognized. So that's my feeling. We have to struggle and fight within and do everything we can to get as many votes as we can to give our point of view, the point of view I espouse, power, and we have to have what they did him. But you have to make demands. And here I can show you in a Matzav HaRuach, one of the weeklies they give out, and this is a Mizrahi publication, so they quote Rabbi Riskin, and they write this whole article that he's a Talmud of Rabbi Soloveitchik, and then they quote him. I don't believe this is possible that he could say this. Lefi Rabbanim HaRashim L'Shavah Mi Shehu Yehudi Me'avoyv V'lo Mi'imol Tzorich Giyur. All he needs is a little education, tefillah, not more than that. It's only a formal conversion. I don't know where he's coming from. If your father is Jewish and your mother is not, you are a Gentile al pi halacha. Yes, the acronyms say, that I spoke about that in class, that regularly speaking, if someone comes over to you, and I was in the rap in America, and people came over to me and said, we want to convert to Judaism, I told them, go fly a kite. I told them, go get lost on an isolated map. I did everything. Meet me 6 o'clock in the morning. I did everything I can to discourage them. That's the halacha. I had to see that they really wanted. Then I had to quote the Gemara to them. In the Gemara Yevamatach, Mem Vav, Mem Zayin, had to quote the Gemara. How do you want to join a people that are despised, downtrodden, we've been killed, Inquisition, Hitler, etc.? But if there's Jewish blood in you, we don't have to push them away. We can convert them. But they have to accept. You're going to form a Beis Din. You have to have standards. All right? I would never retroactively invalidate a conversion because the woman was walking around in the supermarket with pants and not a skirt. Now, when it comes to the question of homosexuality in Israel, I have to tell you what I would rule if I were on the Supreme Court. There should be no parade in Jerusalem. This last parade with a murderer, with the Schlissel, my grandson just got engaged to a Schlissel. I hope it's, I wonder if it's not the same family. I have to ask her father. It's a very chashuva family, Moshe Miri Schlissel. Miri was just written up in Makar Rishon. Her daughter is engaged to my grandson. They're getting married in a month's time. I don't know. I'll be Masada Kedushin before I go open my eyes. So, Baruch Hashem. So Schlissel, so you see, a question came up in the Supreme Court. Again, these are topics I've spoken about for hours, years on end, without repeating a word. Meir Kahane hit the nail on the head. The birth of Israel is an absolute contradiction. If we are a Jewish state, how can we be democratic? And if we're democratic, how can we be a Jewish state? There's a contradiction here. So the Supreme Court has had to deal with this problem a number of times, and they have to weigh the two values. And I'll give you an example where Aaron Barak, who knows nothing about Yiddishkeit, but he's a very nice, fine person, I couldn't get over. He was the head of the Supreme Court. He made the Supreme Court into the activist court it is today, that it actually runs the country, although it's not elected and does not represent democracy. And it's not like America where politicians have input. And I hope it'll be changed in my lifetime, not just yours. So Aaron Barak, a question came up with importing meat. We don't have that much cattle in Israel. I don't think you walk around and see cowboys in Israel. Maybe in the Golden Heights you have a few cowboys. So we have to import meat. So, as you know, Israel imports kosher meat. We send out shechtim. It's a very big industry here. We're talking here, it runs into hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. No, some people want to import treif meat. Why only kosher? So they went to the Supreme Court. And Aaron Barak ruled, I quote him, we have two values that conflict here. The Jewish value, we should not be able to import treif meat. The democratic value, we should allow every citizen to do what he wants. In this case, I feel the Jewish value is more important than the democratic value, and he ruled in accordance with the decision of the government that only kosher meat could be imported. If I would get a question about holding a homosexual parade in Jerusalem, first of all, I don't know what they're parading for. Let the Mechallel Shabbos hold the parade. We're Mechallel Shabbos. Women don't go, we don't go. I mean, it's crazy. You want to hold the parade? Not in Jerusalem. Why? 80% of the population is violently offended. Democracy and Judaism. But there's a second reason that's very important. You live in Jerusalem. I live in Jerusalem. Have you ever heard of Sindron Yerushalayim, the Jerusalem syndrome? Have you ever been at the Kotel where you see every type of character under the sun? Some of them normal, some of them abnormal. We've had incidents at Anhar Habayit. I'm living here. I can go into story after story. The Jerusalem syndrome, it brings out the most extreme element of spiritual life, either good or bad, but you are no longer normal when you first approach the Kotel Hamaravi, Jerusalem, and all that goes with it. We have a lot of crazies here. This Schlissel, how do you hold a parade where any moron can come along and shoot and kill? I mean, it's beyond comprehension. And that poor girl who wasn't even a lesbian, but she's, you know, overwhelmed with humanistic tosha values, values of Obama, values of the New York Times. So she had to go and show support for these so-called homos and lesbians, and I guarantee you 90% of the people marching were just normal human beings. But when you live like a toshav, this is what happens. So I would approach it not Yerushalayim, all right? I don't say go to Tel Aviv, but maybe in North Tel Aviv you can get away with a parade. No one is going to shoot at you. All right, that's as far as Israel goes, the problems of the Batei Dinim, the problems of homosexuality. There's one more problem that should be addressed. I have seen my own students running to demonstrations. This goes back to the 70s. That theaters should be open on Shabbos. Democracy, freedom of choice, toshav mentality. And let me explain something. Israel can never be like an American democracy. When we become like an American democracy, we become murderers. We have no right to this land. We have no right to have picked up a gun and shot any Arab for this land. Why? Our right to the land is that we are the inheritors of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We are the descendants of the Jews who lived here in Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni. We are the descendants of the Jews who daven three times a day. If we are Jews, our concept of religion is different. A non-Jew has a concept of religion as a personal commitment. We are Jews on a personal level. But above a personal level, we are part of Am Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, B'nei Yisrael. A Jew davens as an individual, but it's a different davening when you're part of a kahal. The land of Israel is given not to individuals, but the totality of the Jewish people. And that involves a public thoroughfare that has to be Jewish. And this is why in America, you can be Shomer Shabbos, and the buses can run. Even in Borough Park, there are buses running on Shabbos. No one says boo. They're running from Borough Park to Flatbush. If you look at the buses, they're three quarters empty on Shabbos, on Yontif. But it's America, so what if they're buses? In Israel, it's not just that you have to be Shomer Shabbos. The country has to represent Jewish observance. This is Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Look in the Rambam, Hilchat Tshuva. If I do tshuva, do one more mitzvah, I help all of Klal Yisrael as they stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We tip the scale. There's a concept of Am Yisrael, collective unity. And we have to fight strongly that the public thoroughfare has to be Sabbath observant. This is not Sunday in New York. And just think for a minute, as more and more shopping malls open on Shabbos, Modi'in, they just voted by one vote, like the Supreme Court, 6-5 there, 5-4. If that happens, no Jew can go into business. Every Mechallel Shabbos puts you at a disadvantage. He's open 7 days a week, and you're only open 6 days a week. And this is Dinei Nefashot, that the public thoroughfare, we have to speak, we have to show our power, we have to educate, we have to reach out. But the country, personally, do what you want. No one wants to go into your house and tell you what to do. But the public thoroughfare, Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, if not, we have no right to the country. We're Taka Gazlanim, Ganavim. But look at the first Rashi in Bereshit. If we're the continuity of Ben Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, then of course we're correct. Now, the United States of America, there's so many problems to deal with, but let me deal with two major problems. The feminist problem is a problem that haunts us, and we don't have a total answer yet. Life moves on, life changes. If I had my way, I would call for a big demonstration right after Yom Kippur against anyone driving a car. Millions of people have been killed by cars since they were invented. No? What, are we going to give up cars? Some people, whoever they lack, I have to say it, I hate to say it, they lack a little intelligence, spent endless millions of dollars of hiring Citi Field, where the Yankees, I don't know what's going to happen today, but they lost one Friday night, they won one on Saturday, playing the Mets. Every kid in New York who's Shomer Shabbos is running to the newsstand to see what the headlines are. They hired Citi Field, filled it to capacity, to demonstrate against the computer. No, I don't know. They tell me there's pornography on the computers. What else is there that's bad? Pornography, maybe murder, guns, shooting. I don't know. My Talmidim here in this kollel, Reb David Katz, who works for Satma, no one's going to suspect Reb David Katz of being a lowlife, taught me, challenged me, said, Rebbe, it's a disgrace that you don't know how to use a computer. And he taught me, I was over 70, I said, you know what, my mother, you remember my mother, Toby, my mother learned to use a computer, she was over 70. I learned how to use a computer, absolutely. And I'm a goon when it comes to a computer. I actually, every morning, can go to the New York Yankee website and either cheer or eat my heart out. But I've been able to solve very difficult problems, very shyness I got in this very kollel I was able to solve through the computer. Someday, ask me, I'll tell you a story, and it's just unbelievable how you can solve the most difficult halachic problem, the computer can help you. So I tell them, we're going to get rid of the computer. My wife cries that women work. My wife is an old-fashioned woman, and then she's upset, and her daughters work, my daughters, her daughters, our granddaughters work, and she would love to turn back the clock. Women have to be at home, kids have to come home, find their mothers at home. Can we turn back the clock, I ask you? No. I asked my own granddaughters-in-law, and I have wonderful granddaughters-in-law, Kanai and Hara. Wonderful. They all tell me, if a woman doesn't work, you can't support, you need two salaries. I'm not a, you know, I'm not a multimillionaire, and it's good that I'm not a multimillionaire, because I've seen multimillionaires, and they give their kids, and the kids are not that successful. A kid has to struggle, Baruch Hashem, and they develop, they become great. And I tell you, they tell me they have to work. I've asked other women, I get the same answer. All right, I've seen the way kids have grown up with mothers working. I've seen some fabulous kids, all right? It's true, in America I've seen kids who speak a beautiful Spanish or beautiful Hebrew, that their English needs improvement, because that's who takes care of them all day. But you see, we have to deal with the reality today. You can't take the woman and tell her, like the time of Chazal, Kol Hamalam Ei Bita, you know, I've given many lectures on this. The Gemara in Sota, Daf Chavet, Kol Hamalam Ei Bita, Kilo Limda Tiflet. In the time of Chazal, a woman got married at 12, 13. By 14, she was an old maid. So if you started teaching her Torah Shabbat Peh, you teach her to be devious. You look at the Gemara, I don't want to go into any more details. Nowadays, a woman, I have students, studied with me, are heart surgeons, world famous lawyers, women who run banks, accountancy firms, women in research. I have a grandson, one of my grandsons, I have a number of grandchildren in the Technion. So I went to visit this particular, to see what he's doing. He's in a very unique program, and the equipment he works with in research with cells, it's tens of millions of dollars of equipment made especially in Germany for this type of research. So I saw in his department, the three other people working with him are all women. Brilliant women. No, if a woman can be a neurosurgeon, if a woman can be a space scientist, if a woman can conquer any field of toshav endeavor, so what are you going to tell her? She can't learn Shas? She can't learn Poskim? Understand? Now, I want you to understand, Rabbi Morty Willick, who made this statement, and boy, they are shooting at him like crazy. I mean, it's Kamotzei Sholol Rav. They don't understand what Morty, I understand Rabbi Willick very well. I don't agree. You can't turn back the clock. But what he is saying, that our opening the door to women, we've come up with some very big problems. Everyone's ordaining rabbis, women, with all the problems involved in ordination, what it means. So I'll tell you, we're living the experiment now. We haven't reached the final conclusion. 90% of the time, we are very successful. Women learn and understand Torah and become great in Torah and great in knowledge. And I have Talmidot who have published articles. There was one Talmid of mine, a medical doctor in a Lancet, and Dina Cohen, she studied, I believe it's Dina Zimmerman today, she published an article in Tradition on the problems of a woman with Tat Mishpacha. No man could have written an article that deep and that profound. Only a woman who knows she's been through Shas already. So my proposal, and I've said this many, many times, and I say it again, and I suddenly saw one other Rav repeated what I said. I don't know if he repeated it hearing that I said it or on his own. Look, there are women who want to live a life where they're involved in spirituality. I believe that every shul in the world of stature should have a woman on staff who's, you don't call her rabbi, you don't call her rabbi, you don't call her marat, I would call her a spiritual advisor, yoetzet datit, or some term, yoetzet ruchanit, give her a nice title. And I would ask her, black and white, that no male rabbi is allowed to sit with a woman and give her guidance, well, let's say going through a divorce, teaching her about conversion, Yiddishkeit, on a one-to-one basis.
The door open.
With the door open, with the door closed, the rabbis have so disgraced the title rabbi that anyone in America who called me rabbi, I smacked their face and I told them it's either Rebbe or Aaron. If you learn Torah from me, you have a right to call me Rebbe. If you didn't learn Torah, call me Aaron or Ronnie, whatever you want. Not rabbi. God have mercy, what we have seen, that a rabbi can take a mikvah. I can't even talk about it. It sickens me. This Ezra Schoenfeld, and look how gullible, pardon me ladies, look how gullible women can be, that this lowlife convinces them, don't want to go further. You understand? God have mercy, what we have seen far in five towns. You're looking at a shul, hundreds of people. This was the shul where Rabbi Rachman was rabbi, where Rabbi Wurzberger was rabbi. Now everyone became Haredi. So you look at the shul and you'll say, who is the biggest Eisvach in the shul? And the answer, the rabbi. I mean, just think what we're up against. And it's not isolated cases anymore. And this descendant from the Satmas family running seminaries for girls here. Shem Yerachim, where are we at? Michalar, a few years ago, I came home from the Kotel. I was in a state of shock because I knew the players. The woman who blew the whistle was my student. And they fired her. That's how it became public knowledge, because she went to labor court. Labor court is not the Beit Mishpat Shalom. It's open to the reporters, hang around there, sniffing for a story. So I came home, and I was all upset. My grandson says to me, Saba, why are you so upset? At least there was a man and a woman. I said, now I'm doubly upset because you're right. I said, you're right. Nebuch, that kid suffered immensely with the scandal in our camp. Rabbis have lost their credence. I can give you a long list of rabbanim who ran off with women they counseled and disgraced themselves, disgraced the Torah. One was a Kohen, and then suddenly he runs off with a grusha. Divorces his wife of under 50 years. He was pointed thousands of children as a Kohen. Now, do you understand the halachic implications? All right, we have women today who are learned, women who are knowledgeable, women who know Shulchan Aruch, women who know Psak, women who can take a course in listen to Shayum from a Kolil of Shedut and Shuvat and understand what the Rebbe is talking about. Ashrenu shezachim l'kach. We can't turn back the clock. We're not going to be able to tell the woman, your place is in the kitchen, don't leave the kitchen, that's it. I see my grandchildren, everyone knows how to cook, to bake, my grandsons, I can't believe. And their wife, everyone, it's a partnership. They're not to take care of the kids and change the title. All right. My wife, she would love to go back to the 1870s. Maybe she's right, but there's a reality. Computers are here to stay. Cars are here to stay, and women are liberated, and women are educated, and Chas v'Chalilah, she can study any type of medicine, but Torah Hashem Tamima, she can't study. So please, we have to understand what Rabbi Willig is saying. He is very upset when he sees some of the extreme results. But I have to trust that if you study Torah, it will purify your heart, your mind, your feelings, your emotions. And Torah Hashem Tamima, and I don't think there's a better example than my Rebbe's own family, where he raised his daughters on the same level he raised his only son. and Kanayin Hara take a look what beautiful daughters and what they gave to Klal Yisrael and what they came out of them. And these were women who could open a Gemara and know how to handle it. However, the biggest problem on the American scene is a terrible problem. A problem that haunts us, and I would say to the people listening, it's probably the best reason for you to come in Aliyah. And this is the Torah system. If you don't believe in Torah, then of course you can change it and alter it, and it's not a divine system, and the Reform say that, the Conservatives say that. Lo Aleinu, I'm hearing echoes of it from the Chovevei Torah crowd. Torah is a divine system. I may or may not understand it. I'm a Toshav. I'm influenced by democracy. I'm influenced by the world in which I grew up. So of course, democracy, man and woman marry, man can divorce the wife can divorce the man, that's fair, that's square, that's democratic. Torah does not work that way. The Torah system, a man takes a wife. He runs after the wife. He proposes, even in a case where the wife has to, the wife-to-be has to entrap him, but nevertheless, he has to propose. All right. Smart woman has to know how to do it too at times, because we deal with all types of men in this world. Fine. A get the man has to give. And this is a pasuk in the Torah. This is an entire mesechet in the Torah Sheba'al Peh. There's no way that anyone else can give the get for the man. Over the generations, we've had a terrible problem with the classic Aguna. B'ezrat Hashem, I hope by the end of this year of teaching, I will be privileged to make a Shechayonu on the appearance of a new sefer I'm privileged to publish. It's based upon Shurim. I gave the heart of the volume is on Shurim on Aguna, given in this very kollel. Classic Aguna is the biggest issue in Shulchan Aruch, Eben Ezra, Siman Yud Zayin. Millions of pages have been written on the topic. The classic Aguna we have basically solved today due to the computer, due to mass communication. It's a very minor problem, if at all. But we have a new type of Aguna. In this world, many of us are very self-centered, very individualistic. The modern world, you grew up, no one in this classroom ever had to share a bed. I yet knew people who had to share a bed with siblings. I grew up in an apartment where, in one room, I lived with my two brothers and my grandfather. Okay? So I already grew up learning how to share. Today, most kids have their own room, their own car, their own computer, their own everything. It's a beautiful life. I don't want to go back to the old life. Don't misunderstand me. But it destroys us. And kids get married, they become cruel, and God have mercy, the marriage breaks up, and he will only give a get if he gets $1 million. This is a horrendous problem. It is a disgrace for Torah and its adherents. If a marriage breaks up, it breaks up. I always tell my students, if the woman says she wants out, give a get and walk away in dignity. And I think I have a student in Hollywood, Florida, who's listening, who was mad at the rab and said it could be get, and whatever, he had reasons to be. And he said, I'm only giving a get because I don't want to hurt the feelings of my Rebbe in Jerusalem. Thank God he gave the get. But all right, you got to be a mensch. I'm a romanticist, and I've given lectures on how to work out a happy marriage. You know, in the kollel years ago, listen to the shayurim. Fine, I wrote in Washington, the Rakefet test, everyone quotes it. I'm all in favor, 1,000,000,000% of working out a happy marriage. But if it doesn't work out, you have to give a get. In Israel, we basically have ameliorated this problem because here we have power, thanks to Ben-Gurion, but they didn't have power. If a man doesn't want to give a get, the Beitin can throw him into jail. Now the law was revised. My daughter played a role in this. I told you over the years. What if a man is in jail already? Beitin can throw him into solitary confinement. Until now, only a high-ranking officer in the Shabbos, Sheirut Bitachon Soha. But now, Av Beitin, there were two cases, men who were rotting away, wouldn't give a get, rotting in jail, threw them into solitary. One gave a get within 24 hours, one it took 48 hours. And the reason was the second one was a Taimani, and the Taimanim are very stubborn. I've had Taimani students, they explained to me, this was the secret of our survival, that we're so stubborn, but this is also why we can produce a Yigalamiya, you understand? It's very extreme. But in Israel, we basically solved the problem. I can tell you stories with my daughter as a Tawenet, where she had a tzav to put it, she was sent a case by the way, the Eidah Haray did Beistin, cooperates with Rabbinic Beistin. So she was sent a case of this woman from the Gula area, and the guy, a Haredi guy with a long beard, big successful businessman, but, pardon me for saying it, a mistress in every port. So they sent her the case. She got a tzav to arrest him. The problem was he was in France. Suddenly she gets a call that he's now in Geula Rehov Malachi with a woman. She calls the police. It was 10 o'clock at night. This is years ago. My daughter said she only wishes that it was before videos, that she could have videoed it. She gets into the police car, and there are two policemen, and then they're going to Geula, and the guy with the driver says to the driver, like, maze, tzav, avaho, and the driver says, al tidak, hayiti b'seret hazeh kama pamim, you know, don't worry, we know what we're doing, I've been in this before. They get to Geula, and there he is, tell him to dress, and they take him away in handcuffs. The next day, he was in jail overnight, the next day he gave the get. And my daughter says, but he was a gentleman. When the get is over, and they're letting him out, and he's free. And this is a Hasidic guy-looking guy with a low, or a yeshivish-looking guy. So he goes over to my daughter, and he says to her, kol hakavod. So it had a good ending, but he was getting the Baruch Hashem. He doesn't want to give a get because it involves money, and the guy had plenty of money and plenty of women. What does he have to give a get for? So here in Israel, we have a solution. In America, we do not. And this is a terrible, terrible problem. Now, there is no easy solution, because the man has to want to give a get of his own free will. In America, if Gentiles get involved in forcing him, it is called the get ma'usa. I can't go into all the details now, but you're familiar with the Sibja and Gittin. On the other hand, if Jews force him to give a get, this is an open Gemara, Kaitanot HaShemar Rotsa, Ali, the Rambam Hilchot Gerushin, Perek Bet, Halacha Chaf, 220, if I'm not mistaken, Rambam explains beautifully, Jews can beat the hell out of him, and it's not considered forcing him, because what you're doing is getting rid of the Yetzer Hara, in Hasidic terminology, the Klipot, and you're getting to the real Jew who wants to live according to Torah. Not many times in America can you get Jews to beat the guy up, and you know what's happened now with these people found guilty from Lakewood. What, they take $50,000 to use a cow prod on this guy who wouldn't give a get. Now, many years ago, this is a very rare sefer you're looking at, and Rabbi Bednash looked at it, and he knows a great deal. He didn't know about this sefer, but it's a rare sefer. I was teaching in Michala, an Israeli class, must be in the early 70s, and this Israeli girl comes over to me after class in perfect English and tells me with a Boston accent, my father knows you.
Can't be perfect English.
Well, it's perfect Boston English. It's not the Bronx English that I speak. I always say I speak three languages, English, Yiddish, and Hebrew, all with the Bronx accent. So this girl comes over to me and says, my father knows you, and he'd like to correspond, like to be in touch with you. Fine. Tells me her father's name, Marvin Antelman, Moshe Antelman, Zechron Levracha. Marvin Antelman was a little older than I am, a very bright kid from Boston. Good-looking kid, blonde hair. How many kids had blonde hair in YU in my days, at least? Very smart. Finishes Yeshiva College, goes to Chaim Berlin, and then I heard he got a doctorate, a genius, and he works for Konak in Rochester, and he has patents. And then I find out he's at Weizmann Institute, Rehovot. Did you know him?
Well.
So you know Marvin. So he was very troubled by these women who can't get a get. So he came up with a concept. Get zikui. Write it down. This is the term. This is the term that's being used all over today. Get zikui. He published the sefer Lifdot Mechake Get. It's a play on words. Lifdot Mechake Kates. Waiting for Mashiach. To redeem the women waiting for a get. What does it mean, get zikui? And he comes up with the concept that the beitin can give a get as a schut for the man. The man is a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, brutus, depraved, degenerate, surreptitious individual. We will give a get instead. It's a schut for him, a schut for his neshama. Right, it's a beautiful idea. But halachically, what are we talking about? It's laughable. But he came up with two basic sources. I have to tell you, I can't go into it in detail, but my letters are all over this book, if you notice. This is one of my, there are many letters of mine, we went back and forth. And I have to be honest, I never could believe their sources. Yes, he came up, the Kushnet Samagit, this is a Talmud of the one of the early Rebbeim, a great Talmud Chacham, Hasidic world. So there was a story of a woman who was married, and her husband disappears, and years later he shows up with the Russian army, Polish army, and it turned out he converted, and they plead with him, give a get, and he says, all right, I'll give a get, and before he can authorize the get, the army departs, and they never see him again. So the Kushnet Samagit said, since he said he wanted to give a get, we will give it from as a schut, because he's indicated he wanted to, even though he didn't give the authorization. So that's one case. In the early part of the last century, World War I, 100 years ago, there was a case that came before Rabbi Eliyahu Klatskin, who was a big Rav in Poland, a big Talmud Chacham, a Gaon Adir, later settled in Israel. And there was a Jew who was going out to war, and he wanted to give an authorization, said, I want to give a get, and he kind of leave, his unit was called up before he could sign the forms, and he was never heard from again. So now the question is, if he's alive, she can't be married. If he's not, if she could have a get that he authorized, so mimanavshach, either he's dead or she's a grusha, she can remarry. So he authorized giving a get. I believe he was Rav in Lublin. You can check me out, but it was Rav in Lublin, on Beitin in Lublin, and he too authorized. So this concept came up of get zikui. Of course, it was rejected by Rav Herzog, and I write this, you see in my correspondence with Antelman, I write to Marvin that Rav Herzog rejected it, Rav Weinberg rejected it, but how can you use it in these modern cases where the man is standing there and yelling, I won't give a get to that rotten woman, to that woman whom I hate, whom I despise, to that idiot, if she won't give me $1 million. So how can you go and give a get? How can you get see clear how this works? All right, we debated. He put out a whole volume. He later formed a based in Israel, the Supreme Rabbinical Court. It's all in here. Well, it's a very fascinating volume. For me, it's very fascinating because you have all the literature, the rabbinic literature. He Xeroxed, put it together. Listen, he certainly meant well, but halachically, it doesn't get off the ground.
And what's this his name?
What's his name again? Moshe Shlomo Antelman. Maybe it's on Hebrew books. Maybe you can find it on the website.
What year was it?
Aleph Nun. What year was this published? Let's see. 1994. 21 years ago. 1994. He died, what is it, Morty? A few years ago, am I right?
Yeah.
Not many years. Not, he couldn't be more than late 70s when he died, if that old.
Like that, yeah.
Wait, give me 1 second. Give me 1 second, Tommy. In America, they formed a based in, international based in, to solve the problem. And they ran with the title Get Zikui. In my humble opinion, this was a very bad mistake. Because a based in like this is not going to be accepted by the Haredi world, the right-wing world, Muslim, much of the Kippah Sruga world, the Lamdisha world, the world of Baron Lichtenstein, was a mistake. You picked on a topic that you cannot sell to the majority of Torah observant Jews. What good does this do? If the lady thinks she can remarry, and 90% of the Rabbanim in Flatbush and Borough Park in Yerushalayim are going to tell her, any kids you have from the second marriage are mamzerim. Now, I don't want to question the motives. I know it's a tragedy, but it can only be solved halachically. From what I understand, that we don't have black and white information in front of us, over 20 women this based in was matir. And stories are starting to leak out. One story, I was shaken when I heard it, that they went and looked at videos of the wedding. And in the videos of the wedding, they didn't see two witnesses standing under the chuppah. And on that basis, they reached the conclusion there were no Edom at the wedding. Well, this is frightening. Number one, the Rav who was Masada Kedushin was an Orthodox rabbi, a rabbi who everyone says knew what he was doing. You look at a video, what does a video show? It can't show everyone. Number two, there were hundreds of people in the audience. Among them, many Shomer Shabbos who were not related to the Chatan or Kala. On this basis, you can be Mater and Esh Adish. Again, you got to know the facts. There's one story they tell where this woman ran away from this man. He had a terrible temper. And then she found out that before their marriage, he had gone for counseling to control his temper. Do they have an official word for that? Well, what is it called? Anger control? What's it called?
Anger management.
So I want to tell you, maybe we can do something. Maybe we can start the concept of Mekachva. You have to know how to learn. You have to know Reb Meisher's Tshuva. I want to make a suggestion. You can't organize a beitin that the heart of the beitin is identified with Chovevei Torah. Rabbi Simcha Krauss is a friend of mine. He's one of the nicest people I know. And I have to tell you that. He's a mensch. I've had many arguments with him. He is a Chaim Berlin boy who was a Talmud Mumfaka Rav Yitzchak Kutner, who over the years moved more and more and more and more. And today he's one of those involved with counseling Chovevei Torah. This is Rav Simcha Krauss. All right, he's entitled to his opinions. I would propose that this Beis Din should reconvene and invite Reb David Feinstein to be the Av Beis Din. Reb David Feinstein, and I have to tell you, he is a ziskite of a human being. He is a Talmud Chacham Mufak. He knows his father's psakim in Dinei Ishut backwards and forwards. If Reb David would head up the Beis Din, and I don't know, he has to be willing, then you would have a Beis Din that would have a lot more acceptance than just isolated names thrown at the greater Torah world. Halavai. Maybe there are cases that a video shows there are no witnesses. I don't believe any great Talmud Chacham in the world could paskin that she can remarry without a get. Again, if those are the facts, none of us know for sure. In a case where he went for anger management and she didn't know about it, you can make a case. That's like Reb Moshe, where a person had mental problems and she didn't know that he had psychiatric help before they get married. And after their marriage, the psychiatric dinosaur in him came out and there was like an atom bomb explosion. Reb Moshe was mocked on the basis of Mekach Talut. But if Reb David Feinstein signs on, it would be fabulous.
But it would only work in some cases.
Yeah, of course. There's no zikui get. You can't even start to discuss here because the man is yelling. But it could be there are some cases. But you need a base and that will be accepted. So even in the Haredi world, there are always going to be people who will say, no, who's Reb David Feinstein? There are going to be people. He came out against Matzitza Bepeh. So I saw already there was accusations against him. We'll talk about it in this class. Would he what?
Would he ever even go to be on a
basin
with
Reb Krauss? Let Reb David answer you. Reb Simcha Krauss, as far as I'm concerned, is a solid individual. But not to be the Av Beis Din, the guiding spirit, has to be someone like Reb David. Now, Reb Heschel Schechter came out, and boy, they attacked him because he criticized Reb Simcha Krauss, and others signed on. The problem, and Reb Heschel, you should know, if anyone fights for women and fights for Gunat and Ora, and my own students who have gone to demonstrations with him, is Reb Heschel Schechter. I don't think there's any other Rebbe in the United States with his feeling of dedication to help. But it has to be halachically. This is a terrible, terrible problem. And Chovev Torah adds to the problem because of all their comments on biblical criticism and ongoing revelation and women rabbis and homosexuals and Shechiyanu. So people hear the name of someone who has some association with Chovev Torah and they run as if they're running from the fire. Let me conclude. Let me review and conclude. I have what I spoke about today. I could speak from now to next June. I don't intend to talk about Hashkafa, maybe before Pesach again if the world collapses. I want to teach and give knowledge to myself. You want to listen? Listen. Tomorrow you hear what I have to say about the rabbi. Well, I have what to say. I'm going to quote a book that just came out that I'm probably the first one to see it. Yes, Ger V'Toshav. We always have to remember, at times, we have to say no to the Toshav aspects. Number two, Rakefet may be a very big religious Zionist, and a YU graduate, and a man who's very proud of his background and his knowledge with Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. But remember, we're part of a big Torah world. We're not the only ones. And I don't want to build a shul where a Hasidic Yid can't come in and daven. Number three, and this is most frightening, the conversation I had with some of the heads of Chovevei, I could have had that exact conversation with Solomon Schechter 100 years ago. Exactly the same. And we know what happened there. Shem Yirachem, when we make a Shechiyanu, on Toeva. Problems in Israel, what they did in Geirut, in my opinion, we have to work within the system. Our ballot is our bullet. Shmirat Shabbat b'parhesia is basic to our claim to the state of Israel. No one should allow a parade of komos, whatever they wish to call themselves, chadminiyim in Yerushalayim. Jerusalem syndrome says it all. The United States, feminism, we can't turn back the clock, but I hope we'll be able to channel it, to guide it to very positive results. The self-inflicted agunner, or the man-inflicted agunner, or the man-made agunner is the most horrendous problem we have. It is Chil Hashem of the highest order. We have to do everything possible to help. And I have, to my credit, I was Matir and Aguna from Russia, as you all know if you've studied Washington and read the sources I refer you to. I have a good track record. But it must be done within the halachic context. This is the message of Sukkot. Minig Yisrael, no tel lulav betocha sukkah. Why is it so important to combine two different mitzvot? But you have to understand what these mitzvot represent. Pesach is physical freedom. Shavuot is spiritual freedom. But how do you combine the two? How do you merge the two? How do you synthesize the two? No talulav betocha sukkah. Sukkot is the one holiday where we succeed in bringing spiritual and physical freedom together, where we master lifestyle in accordance with its dictates. Sukkah is anane hakavod, spiritual freedom, God guiding us. Lulav and Etro, the farmer. Physical freedom, physical, material, temporal achievement. You have to learn how to master the two. To live as a ger and to live as a toshav. To understand how to take the lulav and etrog b'tocha sukkah. And this is why the Rambam Paskins, Hilchat Lulav, you can all check it out, Perek Chet, Halacha Yudbet, Halacha Yudalad, the source of Simcha is Sukkot. Afal pisha kolam adot mitzvah l'smoach b'hem, b'chag ha-sukkot hayta shom b'mikdash Simcha yateira, shenema usamachtem l'tnei Hashem alokeitem shivat yamim, the ultimate Simcha is Sukkot. Why? Because there we master the combination, the merger. We don't live in a cave, we live in the big world. No talula v'netro, but tocha sukkah. The Medrash says, four times it says, Simcha in the Torah, for Chag, three out of the four of by Sukkot. And then Halacha Yudalad, Mitzvah laharbot b'simcha zu, and he's talking about Simchat Beit HaShoeva. And then the Ram says something amazing. V'lo yuosim osta amei ha'aret v'kol mi sheyirtzeh. Who ever heard of a psak like this? That not every Jew can do it. What? Every Jew has to observe Shabbat, kashrut, tachrit, v'chag. Suddenly, not the ignoramus, not the dummies. Ele gedolei chachmei Yisrael v'rashi ha'yishivot v'asanchedvim v'achsidim v'askenim v'anshei maisa. Heim shohi umarakdim, umesapkim, umenagim, umesamchim b'mikdash. B'mei ha'gasukat, only the greatest Jews, gedolei Yisrael, gedolei Rashi Yeshiva. Avol kol ha'am ha'nashim v'nashim, kulam ba'im lirot v'lishmoa. And the masses come to observe what's happening here. If it's a mitzvah, we all have to do it. We're not Catholics. It's not one religion for the clergy and another religion for the masses. But the Rambam is very powerful. based upon the Gemara and Sukkah, of course, the Mishnah. To combine the two, we need guidance. This is Torah. This is Torah Shebaal Peh. This is Talmud and Rebbe. We can't do it on our own. We have to observe. We have to listen. We have to learn. We have to be informed. We have to realize we're continuing the tradition that began with Maimon HaSinai. And this is where a chassid can understand this very easily. This is why a chassid's eyes are upon his Rebbe. This is a Fabrengen, and there's only one Rebbe in the room. Thousands of sets of eyes, pairs of eyes, are upon that Rebbe. But even for Litvak, Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva, look at the words of the Rambam. I mean, Model HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I had a Rebbe like Muri Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, that he taught me how to balance out Ger V'Toshav, Pesach and Shvuot, how to be Notel, Lulav and Etrog, V'Toch HaSukkah. And finally, now you can understand Simchat Beit HaShoeva, you reach the ultimate joy. And where is the ultimate joy? What? Drawing water, Mayim. Mayim, what is water? The simplest element in the world, water. Don't have to bake it, don't have to cook it, don't have to make it, water. Plain, simple water. Something that's so much a part of us, an everyday element, part of our bodies, part of our life, part of our existence. But this is exactly why there's great simcha with water. The trick of being a Jew is not to disappear from the world, not to go into a cave, not to retreat. The trick of being a Jew is to deal with the reality of life, the everyday existence of the Jew, to deal with the water. And if you know, Eich Ushafta Mayim Bisasomi Meinai HaYeshua, if you've mastered life and how to sanctify water, then this is Torah. This is complete existence before God and man. This is the totality of a Ger and Toshav. And this is why there's such a great simcha on Sukkot. So B'ezrat Hashem, we should have a wonderful Yom Kippur. The radio already is scaring the hell out of us, plain and simple. If you heard what they said today, I'm shaking like a leaf. That is going to be unbelievably hot on Yom Kippur. And I already got endless sheilat from people who are pregnant with Yom Kippur coming. I've been giving out the sheyurim, what you eat, etc., and drink. But we should be zeicher for a tremendous Yom Kippur, a real simcha on Sukkot. I wouldn't miss tomorrow morning's shir for all the Hasidim who are returning from Uman at this moment in time. And v'sorah tova, yeshuot v'recha, matnot, we meet again in health and happiness. Das v'danya. Now, wait a minute, I just want to work out cars to get people home. 1 second. Morty, you can take them. Yitzchak?
Daven
Marav? Can we daven Marav yet?
Yeah, we're 42.
42. So we can daven Marav. 1 second, so let's stay. 1 second, let's make a minion.